Support for WVIK comes from Kathleen Collins at the Dragonfly in Bettendorf, using both conventional and alternative counseling methods for empowerment to help create change for individuals and couples. More information is at KathleenCollinsCounseling.com.
I couldn't figure out, we didn't know each other. We never spent any time together. So I decided when I was in Washington, I was not going to buy an apartment or a condo or anything. I was going to live on a boat. I told my wife, I just cannot get myself tethered to this area because I think it's wrong. You shouldn't be. This is not permanent. It's not my job. This is my service. Okay? And if I would have planted roots and bought a home or bought something, it's almost like I was planting myself. So I bought the boat. And guess what? I started saying, hey, guys, why don't you, and things weren't going good, and everyone's arguing and fighting. I said, why don't you come down, we'll have a little dinner, and we'll, you know, have a couple drinks or something. And that started happening. I said, okay, here's the rules. If you come down, you want to come, you got to bring three of the opposite party. So my Republican friends said, Joe, can we bring a few people down? I said, sure, as long as you balance it out. Made them start, let's think, who can you get from the other side? Bring them with you. Somebody you might not know, bring them down, I don't care. We're going to feed them and have a good time and just get to know each other. It wasn't all about politics, but we did a lot of good things. I'm going to give you a quick story. It's in the book. Tom Harkin, a good man, a great friend from Iowa. Tom's more left than I. My New politics wouldn't have been Tom's. But Tom was just such a good man, he would compromise. He'd start out at the left and he'd come back to where he had to get something done, which is great. Anyway, he come down. He said, Joe, I had a glass of wine. He said, hey, Joe. You know, I've been here 30 years. I've never been on the Potomac River. It's going to be great. And I said, Tom, you're going to enjoy it.
You're listening to Heartland Politics with Robin Johnson, a presentation of WVIK, Quad Cities, NPR.
Hi, everybody. Welcome back to the Heartland Politics show and podcast, which is aired on and distributed by WVIK, Quad Cities, NPR. WVIK is the flagship public radio station in the Quad Cities region of eastern Iowa and northwestern Illinois. This is your host, Robin Johnson, and I'm really honored today to have as my guest former West Virginia Senator and Governor Joe Manchin. He's somebody that represents the middle in politics and is somebody who considers himself in the middle. I really enjoyed his recent book, and I'd like to share this with our listeners today. I think it's a very important discussion, and he's got a very important message to share. The book is called Dead Center: In Defense of Common Sense. It's striking to me that common sense needs defended, but you know what? It does. Senator, thank you so much for taking the time today.
Thanks, Robin, for having me. Let me say one thing about the common sense. Common sense needs defended in the political arena today. It doesn't need defended with American people. That's how they run their lives. You and I, any business person, small or large, any family, that's how they run their lives. They can't do it from the extremes. And you know what? The politicians can't do it from the extremes either. I have been involved in political process for over 40 years. I've never seen one piece of legislation ever pass that came from the extreme left or the extreme right. It had to always come back to the middle to garner support.
You know, I got to share a quick anecdote with you because this goes along with this, and then we'll get to some of my specific questions about the book. But I teach part-time at a college, and I was sharing a story one day, and you'll remember this, when President Reagan and Tip O'Neill would get together and work things out. And my students thought I was kidding. They couldn't believe that because they've grown up in an era when we've got government shutdowns and all this partisan fighting. But it did happen, and I'm hoping it can happen again. Maybe more people will read your book.
Well, I would hope they do, because the book basically tells you how you can be grounded and be yourself and also get an awful lot accomplished and being honest and upfront. You don't have to be toxic. You don't have to call people names and tell them how stupid and ugly and fat and this and that. Basically just say, you know what? I want to be with you. I want to help you with the problem you brought to me, but I can't really go home and explain what you want me to vote for right now. But if you'll work with me and we can change it a little bit, I'm going to get two answers from my fellow Democrats and Republicans when they ask me to co-sponsor a bill. They're going to say, Joe, we really can't change it. It's too late to change it. I just can't change it. What they're telling me, we're going to make a political statement. We probably know it's not going to pass, but we're just making a political statement. And I would say in a nice way, okay, I know where you're coming from, and that's okay. But whenever you want to be serious about trying to get it passed, I want to be serious about helping you. So don't be afraid to come back to me. Don't ever close the door, Robin. When you start getting nasty and you're taking delight in telling people, hell no, go to heck, you know, and this and that, that's not, you don't get anything accomplished. And then the atmosphere that we work in, it's toxic. We're expected to try to get our counterpart on the other side. So if you're caucusing with Democrats, that means everybody on the Republican is fair game when they run. Now, you got to imagine 33 senators are running every 2 years. So you're going to have, you could, you know, theoretically, you could flip-flop back and forth. Democrats are a majority, Republicans are in a majority. Boom, boom. But when that happens like that, you want people to be able to, I'm not going to go out and campaign against you, Robin. You're a Democrat. I'm a Republican. You're a friend. We work together. I wish you the best back home. Now, I'm not going to, I'm not going to be intervene. I'm not going to give money to your opponent, which I would never know. But that's what is expected. You understand? They want you to use your PAC money. They want you to raise and call and raise money continuously. And then when anybody from the other side is running, you're supposed to be against whoever on your side of the aisle is running against them. I said, so I tried to pass a piece of legislation, just introduce it, called an ethical violation if you campaigned against a sitting colleague. That would set the whole workplace environment differently. It'd be an ethical violation to campaign against a sitting colleague, Democrat or Republican, or to give money to support someone trying to defeat a sitting colleague. So let the people from Texas, Illinois, make their decision who they want. And my approach to the process is, I'm going to work with whoever that state sends me as their representative, because this democracy of ours is based on and founded on a democracy that's a representative form of government. We thought, and we still think, that we can choose people to represent us. And the biggest conundrum of all, Robin, is the process that we do that in. We've allowed the parties to take total control of the process. They control the primaries. They close them down. You have to be a Democrat to vote in a Democratic primary in some states. You have to be Republican to vote for Republicans. The best system for us to have a representative form of government is to have an open primary process. They're going to say, well, that weakens the party. Our founding fathers never intended the parties to have control. Just read the passage when the farewell address in 1796 of George Washington. He was very much concerned that this toxic atmosphere would destroy our experiment, democracy. So it's happening. So how do we take it back? That's, first of all, people I think would agree, but they don't know. So my daughter and I started what we call Americans Together. What that is about, Robin, we're trying to educate the people of wherever you live. If you're unhappy, you don't know who your representative is, they keep gerrymandering your district and all on and on and on. We're going to show you where you live, the type of politics you're going to receive from where you live, and how you might start a change. And it's going to change from the people saying enough's enough. It's not working in Washington. And it might be because of how we're sending and who we're sending and how we're electing the people we're sending there.
You know, your public service, your current public service started in the 80s. When do you think this started? I mean, we always had robust competition between the parties. I'm old enough to remember it too. But there's an interesting question I ask people that come on. When did this start? What provoked this hyper-partisanship that you just described where, you know, if you just talk to somebody from the other side of the aisle, you get in trouble?
Well, it's got worse and worse. So I asked the same question you just asked me. So I asked some older senators. I was elected in November of 2010. I was a governor before that, and I was Secretary of State before that, and I've been House of Delegates, State Senator. So I've been through all the rungs of state government in West Virginia, and I enjoyed every bit of it, and I've learned a lot. But I asked, I said, I've never seen this before. I never grew up thinking that Republicans were my enemy. They were all my friends, and we never went at it to where I got to defeat you. You know, we would run against each other. We'd compete. But then we'd all get together and try to work together, too. So I asked that question to one of the older senators. I said, when did this happen? They said, I'll tell you exactly when it happened, in 2005. It was recently, 20 years ago. I said, how did it happen? They said, the best that we can tell you, we always had an unwritten agreement that we would not campaign against each other. We would not basically try to fight each other. So in 2004, in the 2004 election, which turned into the 2005, whoever was elected, Tom Daschle was the majority leader from South Dakota, Tom Daschle. Bill Frist was the minority leader from Tennessee. They're telling me, this is what people did observe, what happened. I wasn't there. First of all, the majority leader and the minority or the ranking member in the Senate and even in the House, they should be talking all the time, figuring out how they're going to process, what's going to be the day's action, what they're going to agree and disagree on, and how they move forward. They should be meeting continuously. Since I've been there in 2010, I've never seen them ever sit down and meet. We have one bipartisan luncheon a year. The only time I ever see them in the same room trying to talk and work together. They might send staff over, but those two should have a relationship. So Tom Daschle and in 2004, Bill Frist should have had a relationship. Well, I'm told that Bill Frist campaigned against Tom Daschle in South Dakota, and not only campaigned against him, he traveled to South Dakota to appear against Tom Daschle. And John Thune, who's a dear friend of mine, a Republican, beat Tom Daschle, but still yet, Tom Daschle going to there openly campaigning against someone who should have been a friend, but an opposition party, but should have been able to work together, that broke down completely. And they said after the 2004 election and Tom Daschle was defeated, it went to hell in a handbasket. I mean, it was total war, and it kept getting more progressive, more worse, more toxic. It was just awful. Now, that's what I have heard from many senators that were around at that time. So that they said, okay, then they were rewarding for bad behavior. The person that he went defeated Tom Daschle. He can think, well, we showed the strength of the Republican Party and him representing the Republican Senate. But it really was the downfall of the decorum that we have and should have had in the Senate and should still have, and the civility.
You get elected and you had a unique way of trying to bring people together.
Yeah.
As you recount in your book, please share that with our listeners.
I couldn't figure out. We didn't know each other. We never spent any time together. So I decided when I was in Washington, I was not going to buy an apartment or a condo or anything. I was going to live on a boat. I told my wife, I just cannot get myself tethered to this area, because I think it's wrong. You shouldn't be. This is not permanent. It's not my job. This is my service. Okay? And if I would have planted roots and bought a home or bought something, it's almost like I was planting myself. So I bought the boat. And guess what? I started saying, hey, guys, why don't you, and things weren't going good, and everyone's arguing and fighting. I said, why don't you come down? We'll have a little dinner, and we'll, you know, have a couple drinks or something. And that started happening. And I said, okay, here's the rules. If you come down, you want to come, you got to bring three of the opposite party. So my Republican friend said, Joe, can we bring a few people down? I said, sure, as long as you balance it out. And made him start this thing. Who can you get from the other side? Bring them with you. Somebody you might not know, bring them down. I don't care. We're going to feed them and have a good time and just get to know each other. It wasn't all about politics, but we did a lot of good things. I'm going to give you a quick story. It's in the book. Tom Harkin, a good man, a great friend from Iowa. Tom's more left than I. My your politics wouldn't have been Tom's. But Tom was just such a good man, he would compromise. He'd start out at the left, and he'd come back to where he had to get something done, which is great. Anyway, he come down. He said, Joe, I had a glass of wine. He said, hey, Joe, you know, I've been here 30 years. I've never been on the Potomac River. It's going to be great. And I said, Tom, you're going to enjoy it. About that time, Ted Cruz walked down the ramp to come on the boat. Tom says, oh, my God, let me off this damn boat. I'm not going to go out. I said, Tom, calm down. I gave him another glass of wine real quick. And I said, get on, Ted, hurry up. So we untied the line and took off. Let me just tell you, within 1 hour, Robin, those two were talking, sitting together, talking. The next day they did an amendment together. It's unbelievable just to get to know each other. And they would have never done that if it hadn't been for that little interaction we had, social interaction. That's what we're missing.
I agree 100%. You're listening to Heartland Politics on WVIK Quad Cities NPR. I'm your host, Robin Johnson, and I'm just delighted to have as my guest today former West Virginia Governor, Senator Joe Manchin, who's written a really good book called Dead Center in Defense of Common Sense. We're talking about that a little bit here. I've got to go back real quick. We've been sharing some stories of when this hyperpartisanship started and Senator Manchin's attempt to bring people together. But I got to go back in time because I'm just fascinated by this. Everybody, you know, your upbringing really defines who you are, your values. Yeah. But I love the story of your spaghetti and meatball dinner with a very famous person going back to the crucial 1960 West Virginia primary.
Yeah. I'm 12 years old, and my family was very much involved. I could never figure out why they got so excited about a national election. And here's this young, ethnic, Catholic boy running for president. Well, my family, my dad's family came from Italy, and my mom's family came from Czechoslovakia. So we're an ethnic family, okay? And we were Catholic, and there weren't many Catholics in West Virginia. So I give you a quick anecdote about both of that. So my parents were excited. So I said, oh, that's good. I got interested. And I kept getting, and my dad was driving JFK around in the car and taking him. My uncle was campaigning with all of them. And President Kennedy told my brother, my uncle, Uncle Jimmy, we called him. He was a politician in the family. And they said, he said, now, John Kennedy would say, now, Brother Jimmy, your main job is teach my little brother Teddy how to speak like you. Because my uncle was a great orator. And so anyway, it goes, so one day, I'm working on a go-kart. I love engines. And I was working on a go-kart. And I was kind of dirty and greasy. And my mom came down in a little, we had a little garage apartment. We didn't have a whole lot. But she was fixing spaghetti and meatballs for everybody. And she says, come on up, Josie. I want you to meet some people. And I said, Mom, I'm just all dirty and greasy. I don't want to come up. She says, I think it might be historical. You ought to come up. So I went up and there was Teddy Kennedy and all the Kennedy clan sitting at the table eating meatballs. They were so kind to me and everything, but they didn't miss a bite. They did not miss a bite, Robin. Anyway, so I got interested. Now, one night, to take this a little bit further, we're watching television. My mom and I, we little black and white television back then, 1960. Had to be Walter Cronkite. And they said, it's been said now that John F. Kennedy becomes president, the Pope is going to run the country. I never knew politics was, I never knew that religion was entwined in the political process. And I looked at my mom, I said, boy, Mom, they don't know the Catholics we know. And she laughed. She says, no, honey, this is just all politics. So it, I just took it with a light grain of salt, but it really became, if he didn't win and couldn't basically debunk the whole thing about religion. So that's why I've always taken, you know, the person, well, they're this religion or that religion. That doesn't define who the person is. It's not going to be. Not politics doesn't define who I am. Having a right. D by my name never defined me. That my what my purpose. I had to have, I guess, a D for the system that is developed. And the more I read history, our founding fathers never wanted this system to be controlled the way it is, but the duopoly, two big businesses.
That's right. Yep.
So I'm going to try to do everything I can, working with my daughter to try to educate as many people. Start fighting to open your primaries up. When they want to redistrict, start fighting for basically a nonpartisan redistricting so you have a fair shot at getting someone who might think like you.
I gotta share with my listeners this. For my political science class, I did some research on West Virginia voting and the way it changed so radically. I mean, West Virginia back and prior to 2000 was a blue state, Democratic state, working class state.
Blue. It was absolutely a check mark for the blue.
And it started changing. 2000, it looked like I think West Virginia went for Bush that year. But Joe Manchin's numbers, it's a miracle you won those last couple elections. Because just, again, our listeners, for those of you that aren't deep into politics, I looked at the county numbers, and boy, it was switching strong Republican. And here's this guy at the top, Joe Manchin, still winning. I guess my question is this. What happened to that Democratic Party that you grew up with, that was focused on working class voters? What
Well,
it's
here's what,
changed.
Robin, what Elizabeth Warren and I were talking one day. Now, 2014, we flipped. 2010, I could see it, okay? I got elected in 2004, and I always was carrying very strong numbers, 70% approval rating all the way through as governor. I ran in 2010 after Bob Byrd died. I had to run. I didn't want to run for Senate. I wanted to stay and finish my second term out as governor. But I thought, well, you had to because the way the Constitution was, I wasn't allowed to appoint someone for 2 years and then make a decision in 2012. So I had to make a decision. Am I going to run? I better get involved now if I'm going to. The state was changing at that time, really changing. It's all around social values. It's not around the services or basically the how the Democratic Party and their policies have helped people in Appalachia or in challenged areas, a little bit poorer, if you will. And so they weren't voting that. They were voting social at total, and I could see it. Well, in 2010, I announced I'm going to run for the U.S. Senate. Okay? My heart wasn't in it. But I can tell you, I was at 72% approval rating as a governor in 2010. The day I announced, I lost 20 points overnight of approval. And I couldn't figure out, I said, I haven't changed. I'm the same person. They know me. But they thought I was captured now that I would be Washington because Washington was so toxic. They saw something I didn't see. So I had to fight like the Dickens, and I shot the cap and trade bill, dead aim. And I think when I shot the bill, because I was opposed to it for the simple reason, it didn't fix the problem of how we're going to clean up the environment. All it was doing is taking money from a carbon industry that we had, carbon fuels that we had, fossil fuels that we had to have for energy back then. We had nothing else to turn to. But they were just creating a problem there that wasn't going to be fixed, except taking the money from it and using it for more social services. Made no sense to me. So I shot the bill. And my poll numbers went up 10 points overnight. And after I talked to some friends, they said, Joe, I can tell you what people are saying. Well, you finally showed that you're still going to be just Joe from West Virginia, not Washington. Okay? Now, then I ran in 2012 and won by 25 points again. Okay? 2018 comes up. Donald Trump beat Hillary Clinton by 40 points in West Virginia. He's won my state by over 40 points in 2016, 2020, and 2024. Solid, solid, absolutely ruby red, my state's voting. Giving it a little bit of an antidote here, and it's in the book again, the people, I hope they read it and get an idea. But in 2018, Donald Trump said, President Trump said, Joe, I'm not going to campaign. They want me to campaign against you. I like you. You're my friend. I'm not going to do it. And I said, well, that's really nice, Mr. President. I appreciate that. I want to work with you. I want to work with what's good for my country and my state. Okay, well, I knew he couldn't hold that position because in all just what you said, how in the world anybody should have, you shouldn't have ever won. I said this, Minnie Mouse would have had an R by her name, should have beat me. Because it was so overwhelming. No one's ever won from an R40 state or a D40. You just don't switch if you have an identification. They just never identified me as being a political Democrat or being an anti-political Republican because I worked, made them all work together. So I had that going for me. Well, not only did he get involved in the race, the president came to my state 6 times to campaign against me, and they spent an additional $25 million. A week after the campaign was over and I won an election, he calls me and says, come have lunch with me. I'm thinking, is this man crazy? But I said, okay, I'm going to do it. He's very, very engaging. I enjoy being with him. I just don't enjoy how he speaks and the things he uses and denigrates people and all that. I don't like that. But when I'm with him, that's not the person I see when I'm with him. But you put him in front of a camera, it say anything. Anyway, I go over and I walk in the door. There's a picture in the book that shows the president sitting laughing like the Dickens, Ivanka, his daughter, and Mike Pence. I walked through the door and said, I told you we couldn't beat him. I told you he couldn't be beat. And almost like he was blaming them. And I thought, what the heck do I say? And I said, well, hell, it wasn't for a lack of trying. He says, oh, Joe, you know I wasn't serious. I says, oh, Mr. President, I knew you weren't serious about beating me. Because if you were serious, you'd have came 12 times and spent $50 million. I just, you got to know what you're dealing with. But anyway, the state has changed unlike any other state in a period of one decade, 10 years. We've gone from being 75% registered Democrats to 80% registered Republicans. Unbelievable.
One final topic I want to hit on.
I should finish up this one.
Sure.
And then Elizabeth Warren in 2014 said, what happened to the Democratic Party in West Virginia? I said, nothing. The people I grew up with who were Democrats, they're still there. They might have changed over to Republican. And I said, the only thing I can tell you is how you lost the coal miners and how you lost the factory workers and all the people that we always thought Democrat Party was supposed to be looking out for, a working person, safe working conditions, good working pay, good benefits, boom, boom, boom. All of a sudden now, all these social issues are taking over. And I said, I told her this. I said, they truly feel like the returning Vietnam veteran in West Virginia. They've done everything the country's asked. They mined the coal, they made the steel, they built the guns and ships, defended our country, patriotism. They've served. They built factories. They've done everything you've asked them to do. Now they're not good enough, clean enough, green enough, or smart enough. And they said, to hell with you. And then to put an icing on the cake, what they've said is that the Democratic Party in Washington, D.C. spends more resources, effort, and time concerned about able-bodied people who don't work or won't work than those of us who do. And I'm finished. I can't tell it any different than that.
I'm going to challenge you, Senator, see if you can do this, because I want to hit on this topic because it's very current, and that's the filibuster.
Yeah.
I got 3 minutes here.
Sure.
I had Adam Gentleson on, who was chief of staff to Harry Reid, and he wrote a book saying it's time to get rid of it. I want to let you give the opposite view, which you argue passionately in your book, in about 3 minutes, sir.
It's the only thing, it's basically what makes us the most deliberate body in the world, and it's the only thing that's the holy grail of democracy. It allows, and we're the only body in the world that does it. We allow the minority to participate in the Senate. You can never shut the minority out. That's why you have to have a 60 vote cloture to get on a piece of legislation before you pass it with a simple majority. Without that, ask the Democrats how well they like it now. Ask the gentleman, Harry Reid, his person, how well he likes it now. Can you imagine if there's no filibuster, what Donald Trump will be doing when he has total control of the party? It'd be unbelievable. And now they like it. Whoever's in power wants to get rid of it, because basically it gives them absolute power when they get rid of it. This is the only thing that keeps us from being a banana republic flipping back and forth every 2 years.
Okay, well, thank you for condensing that argument. I've got to say, we barely touched the surface on this book. There's so many other stories. And what I love about it, being in background in politics myself, are the stories, the anecdotes that Senator Manchin has shared here. There's plenty there when he's called the most important senator in the country by Chuck Schumer, the Build Back Better bill. There's some great stories here, and I recommend the book. Hey, it would be a great Christmas present for a loved one who enjoys politics and government. It's called Dead Center in Defense of Common Sense by Joe Manchin. The foreword, by the way, is by Nick Saban, and there's interesting stories there.
We grew up together. We grew up together.
Nick Saban, Sam Huff. So football fans, go buy this book too. Senator, thank you so much for taking the time, and good luck in your efforts to bring common sense back.
If you see our friend Sherry Bustos before I do, please tell her how much I love her and we're thinking of her all the time. She's a great person. Robin, anytime you want me on, just call and I'm happy to do it.
Thank you very much.
Okay. Take care, my friend.
You've been listening to Heartland Politics with Robin Johnson, a presentation of WVIK, Quad Cities, NPR. You can follow Heartland Politics at wvik.org or wherever you subscribe to podcasts.